Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And we're back, and we are still going through the Constitution. It's been a week. Actually, this is supposedly the end of Constitution Week, and we do not let that stop us because we haven't finished going through the Constitution. So it is Constitution Month, Constitution Year, whatever is necessary. And let me just say this, and I've said this many times before. Every state in this union should make one of its biggest celebrations should not be the 4th of July. Should be Thanksgiving and reading George Washington's proclamation, because when you do that, you recognize that we're being called, the first president proclaimed that we should give a day of thanks and service to he who the beneficent who gave us our Constitution, this land, and so forth. And so that's probably the most spiritual holiday we have as a nation, but the most important day for the states, and each state being different, every state should be celebrating the day it became a part of the Union. Now, if you're a part of the original 13 states, then that would be the day that that state ratified the Constitution, because they all ratified it. No one was forced or coerced. Well, maybe Rhode Island. I think Rhode Island, they could sense the tea leaves that it wasn't going to bode well for them if they turned any other way. They needed to become a part of the Union. And their heyday, their 15 minutes of fame was over. They're holding the Union hostage for all the little tertiary, these insignificant things that they just wanted to be obstinate. They pulled off a lot of shenanigans, and they created more harm than they did good. But I also have to tip my hat to them, because had they not behaved the way they did, then there would not have been a need for the Constitutional Convention, which would not have brought us this document that obviously was inspired by the divine hand of providence, and every framer asserts that. So what you have to do is you have to look, when did your state actually, you know, ratify or become a part of the Union? And that day should be a state holiday. Why? Because we need to understand and elevate the importance the states play as the overseers of the compact. They're the parties. They're the superiors over all things not delegated. And they have the responsibility over the general government to ensure that they stay within the boundaries of their compact. So we can't emphasize enough how important it is that states actually take their position as a party to the compact and their responsibilities as well as their roles and well as their power seriously. They have more power than any court. When the states combine into a tribunal to review the Constitution and whether the bargain made has been violated or not, whether the compact that they created has been violated or not. Bargain made, that's a Madison reference. There is no court. The Supreme Court, not even the International Crimes Court or, you know, the kitty court at the UN. No court is superior to the states when it comes to this compact and the laws of this land. So anyhow, as you know, you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. I would beseech you, I would call upon you, if you are looking for some quality furnishings, go to TimberNation.com. It's a family-run business, patriotic, and I'm here to tell you that you will relish the products that you get. I mean, they're heavy, they're quality. And in a pinch, they could probably, you could probably prop these things up against the door because they're 2 inches. Most of these plates are 2 inches thick. If you got the, you know, the evil hordes coming at you, they would probably, maybe not 50 cal, but they would probably stop most caliber coming through the windows or what have you if you were under siege. So anyway, I mean, you get it, right? You've seen people, you know, put furniture and stuff in front of the windows. This would be a very good piece. I mean, look at the crap you get from China. You put that in front of your window. I mean, it may, if you're lucky, it may change the trajectory of that round. It is so weak and cheap. Now, if their bookcase is filled with books, then okay, you know, you'll actually have, you know, a good shot or a good chance of reflecting and or absorbing that round. But anyway, I digress. WeThePeopleCalendar.com. This is a brand new calendar, and if you notice, go check it out. If you get a sample of this, what I'd ask you to do is look at the kind of information, because the information that we're actually loading into this, and I know the guy that's doing this, he comes to me a lot on getting clarification. What do I put here? What do we do here? And so forth, because what we want to do and what I believe he wants to do, and I'm not going to speak for him, but I think he agrees that the intent is to guide people by using this calendar to help them understand the importance of compliance to the Constitution. That, you know, every month is special. As a matter of fact, one of the things he highlights on this is he identifies every state the day it came into the Union. And by so doing, what he has done is he's made it easy for you to find out when your birthday is and when you should be celebrating. And it should be not a paid holiday, but it should be a mandatory holiday that all businesses shut down. Everything ceases unless it's a Sunday, then, you know, obviously religious worship. But the point is, and I would ask every governor to ask the state, or actually the state legislatures should ask their governor to do the same thing that George Washington did in proclaiming that day as a day of service to him. Boy, watch the atheists and these godless people just go bonkos when, you know, the governor actually says, we want to recognize the divine hand of providence who's benefited us with this Constitution and how this state in joining this union has benefited. And so in giving up one day of service and sacrifice, not a day of feasting, not a day of getting drunk, but a day of humility and service. That's how we sanctify things, my friends. If you haven't, and we've talked about this before, if you haven't started sanctifying things that are, you know, that we consider holy of righteous origin or what have you, like the Constitution, instead of being, you know, what's the best way of saying this? Riotous type of acting, getting drunk, loud and riotous, being humble, being, you know, spiritual, being thankful and providing service to others. In so sacrificing, we are sanctifying those days. And that is something that is completely lost in this culture of America today. When's the last time we as a nation willingly humbled ourselves in recognizing, you know, the divine hand of providence and how we've been blessed so many times? If you start to see, if what I am telling you and teaching you gives you the aha moment, the revelation of saying only the Lord knew what we would need and what he put in this Constitution is everything we need to fight back. If you can recognize that, then you should be looking and taking time in giving thanks and sacrifice to the divine hand of providence, our creator, whatever you want to place them into your religious paradigm, and give those thanks and sanctify that. So anyway, I feel like I'm going around in circles, and I feel like I might be admonishing and or lecturing, and I don't want to do that. I just want to give you ideas. If you really want to start changing, you know, some people say, well, we as a nation have to repent. I'm going to tell you, right there, it's not just a repenting, it is recognizing and sanctifying. There you go. That's a big part of this as well. Anyway, we also have radio dust covers, radiodustcovers.com, if you're looking to protect important electronics and important gear. Red Pill Expo is coming up, Louisiana, and actually I'm going to find out what's going to be going on, and I will give you confirmation, hopefully soon, that I will be there and that we'll be leading the dialogue with the states. I've got to be, and that's my next focus. Once I get done with this, my focus is going to really be on that dialogue and the information that these who are going to become champions of the Constitution throughout your state, you're going to want them to be a part of the 21st century, the Bill of Rights for the 21st century, the 2022 campaign. And we're going to basically duplicate this every campaign until these laws actually start becoming reality, making every election local and so forth. But anyway, I hope you're listening, Harry. This is the time when we really go through the Constitution, and this may be the time you actually learn, because unfortunately we did not learn these things in school. You know, going to school with you, I remember we did not learn these things. We learned civics. Anywho, our comment line, 425-270-5416, if you have a comment. And when we come back, we will be diving into Article 2, where we left off. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so Article 2, forgive me, I was just taking a drink. Article 2 actually is the executive branch, the powers, you know, how we choose the president kind of starts that off and so forth. And we just started going through the State of the Union. And it's called that because that's what the Constitution says. Anyway, so what we want to do is we want to go back over that because we didn't get a chance to completely finish this as we were cut off so rudely at the end of the show last time or in our previous episode. So this is Section 3. He, the president, shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. Now, what I think is important right here is that the only things that he can recommend are those things that are within their jurisdiction. In other words, he shouldn't be saying we need to pass a law or we need to start prosecuting people in other nations for not following our laws. I mean, that's ridiculous. We don't have that jurisdiction. But most people don't think of it this way, because how many times do you remember Bill Clinton thinking that he had unlimited access to the purse strings and that they were going to provide for the people and do all of these types of things? And this goes all the way back to the FDR. It goes back to even Teddy Roosevelt, when Teddy Roosevelt wanted and created the Trust Busters, a power that is not within the federal government. They have been assuming these powers. And so what scares me every time I listen to a modern day State of the Union is when this is when the president actually puts on the table ideas of violating the Constitution. We have a lot of cleanup to do. There's no doubt. And the problem is everybody truly believes that because our guy won, he can do whatever he wants to do because it's a mandate. You know, like we live in a democracy, that the Constitution doesn't exist, that, you know, the king can bequeath us anything, whether that be healthcare services or what have you. With FDR, he bequeathed us with Social Security. We need to end this program. When I say end it, that doesn't mean that you won't get your stipend. That doesn't mean that those who put into this won't get their money back. What it means is that as this program goes forward, nobody else puts into it. They will come up with a general fund to pay and actualize this cost, this albatross. And we're going to end the 15% for Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. We end that payroll tax. So guess what? All of a sudden, your payroll tax should, you know, bounce up significantly. And that the only thing that we'll have to take, because Medicare and Medicaid go away. The fact is, Social Security was a different program. And it was a retirement program. All of a sudden, we've got Obamacare. We've got all of these different health cares, and supposedly Medicare and Medicaid's is subsidized. Everything has become subsidized. That all goes away as well. The states are going to have to carry this load. And as a matter of fact, the best way to do this is to push it back to where it actually belonged, or where it belonged at the beginning of this nation. But that's a story for another day. We're talking about the Constitution. So anyway, my point is these states of the Union, they're not states of the Union anymore. These are dreamers of usurping more and more power and waging greater and greater federal tyranny upon the people of the United States. Yeah, boy, it sure seems nice that they're giving us these nice things. But remember, every single one of these things that they give us is a chain that binds us. Remember what Benjamin Franklin says, you know, a government that can give you anything can take everything from you. So anyway, he may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in cases of disagreement between them with respect to the time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. So let me go back to what he just said. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them, he may, with respect to the adjournment. The president actually has the ability to, instead of doing the state of the, remember the fiasco with Pelosi? He could have done the State of the Union and provided that State of the Union, because it's his responsibility to do. He could have done that instead of going in front of the House. He could have done that in front of the Senate and then later on gone to the House and or provided and let Nancy Pelosi do her acts as, you know, as the media would have had to made and would have had to highlight all of this, because he could have just presented his statement to the House of Representatives. Anywho, when you start reading, you start understanding some of these little nuances. It really does help to understand that it is the president's responsibility to provide a State of the Union. It is not Nancy Pelosi's, you know, beckoning wind, what have you, and so forth. And so he could have actually, like I said, he could have actually just provided a State of the Union to the Senate. Anywho, as we move forward, with respects to time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such a time as he think proper. Actually, that would have been good. Wouldn't it be great to have the president adjourn the House of Representatives to a point in time he thinks proper? And he shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers. Now, here's the point that this is really a violation. He should take care that the laws be faithfully executed. We haven't had a president that has faithfully executed the laws, because we have so many laws that are unconstitutional. There's just no way a president can actually do this unless, like I said, when President Trump became president, had he basically just said, I'm shutting down all the bureaucracies, and actually did a whirlwind tour going through every state several times until, you know, the end of his fourth year, being in every state at every point in time he possibly can while they're adjourning and while they're in session and so forth, and say, this is your mess. You have to clean this up. I've shut down these agencies. You do not have any resistance from the federal bureaucracy that is, you know, that has been hanging you and tying you down. You have all the ability, without any federal encumbrance, to clean this mess up. And there would have been a lot of federal employees that would have been just absolutely upset. But so what? They're his departments. He doesn't have to operate them. And so it's like, as I said when I had this conversation with Ward Connerly, yes, the president might be able to disband the Department of Education, might be able to shut these things down or not pay them and do those types of things, but the next president that comes along will be able to undo that and actually do worse things in addition to that, because they believe that they have all these powers. It is only when the states step up in unison, in a unified manner, where we have 27 states or more that have full control over Congress and demand the Congress get rid of these powers, because these powers were never formally delegated. These are usurpations and violations of their compact. In other words, republic review. And when they do that, it ends altogether. They will never be able to create a Department of Education without a formal amendment. They will never be able to create a Department of Transportation. Now, let's get through the compliance before we start talking about even amending for the Department of Transportation, the United States government, because they still do have the power of establishing post roads and maintaining them. Post roads are the roads that take you from your capital to the seat of the federal government, to D.C. Anyway, he shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. So that's being violated. And shall commission all officers of the United States. Section 4. The president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, a misdemeanor is really, you know, a kind of petty crime when you think about it. But back in those days, they wanted the character to be unimpugned. In other words, they had to have such integrity that, you know, they wanted their public servants with such a high moral fiber that there was just no way that they would be impeached, not even shoplifting. Because technically, shoplifting isn't even a misdemeanor. It's petty theft, right? But it was still one of those things that they just did not want to see anybody in public service that would, you know, lower the perception or create a perception of these guys are corrupt. Now look how bad it is today. And look at how we do elections. We have Liz Cheney going into Wyoming with millions of dollars that are coming from outside of her elected district. Who is she representing? Who are those that give her this millions of dollars that are seeking her representation? This is a Republican form of government. That should be a crime. Any politician that takes money from anyone or anything that is outside their area, the district of what they're running for, in her case, outside the state of Wyoming, that would be a crime. It's basically bribery. She's accepting bribery. Oh, well, it's just money, right? Money? Are you kidding? It's not just money. It's influence. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to be hitting Article 3, which is the judiciary. We'll fly through this. Actually, not. But we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, Article 3. This is about the judiciary. And so Section 1 basically identifies what the judicial branch will kind of consist of. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court, and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges, both of the supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office. Now, basically, this kind of lays out that there's going to be the Supreme Court, and then there's going to be these district courts, which are the inferior federal courts, that will hear the cases. But we haven't covered the cases or the jurisdiction of this court system. Okay? That's Section 2. Section 2. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. But does it end there? No, there's a comma. So what that means is all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. So let's just let's take for granted a law regarding speed limits and the Department of Transportation dictating that speed limits cannot exceed a certain amount of, you know, miles per hour in any of the states. Well, we will not find anywhere in the Constitution that grants the federal government any authority over roads and highways and waterways and so forth, or even air travel. There is nothing in this Constitution that has delegated the federal government the ability to regulate and control airspace for traffic, air traffic control, those types of things. Now, as they start creating all of these laws and regulations, even though they may make sense, and even though it just seems like it's right, the initial foundation is unconstitutional, which, if you understand, when they usurp the power and they say, we're going to do this, and then they start doing these, you know, regulations of, you know, eastbound traffic, you know, in the air will fly at a certain altitude, westbound traffic of this, northbound of this, so, you know, so that they don't run into each other. Boy, that just makes sense. They create these regulations and processes and procedures and so forth. Fact is, it's all the color of law. What that means is that they have no authority to make any of these, even though a lot of this stuff worked out and it makes somewhat sense in the management of air traffic and so forth, because we depend a lot in air travel in this country. How many people go to Washington, D.C. on the roads? The fact is, the money that they're using for these road systems to post roads, it's obsolete. Nobody gets in their car and drives to D.C. Most people use those roads to get from here to the next day or somewhere else, but there's very few people that, when they get on that road, are heading to Washington, D.C. I mean, it's a very, very minute amount of traffic. Small percentage, folks, very small percentage. Anybody that's going to D.C. nowadays, it used to be by train as well, but anybody that's going by to D.C., it is by air. You're either flying into BWI, National, or Dulles, right? Those are the three of the areas that people fly into. And the point is that even though we have grown and we've gone down these paths, what they're doing and the control that they have should not be their control. Now, here is an interesting twist, though, and I'm just going to show you how this isn't really complicated. The federal government has, within the Constitution, the ability to have ports of entry. It is their responsibility to ensure all commerce and people leaving and people coming back can actually do so, that, you know, you're a U.S. citizen, you've got your passport, and you leave, and you're on your way to an international, and when you come back, that passport, you're a U.S. citizen. If not, and you're a foreigner, then you have to have a visa. You have to have a reason why you're coming here, and so forth and so on. So they have this responsibility, and we already identified that in Article 1, Section 9, that they have the controls over the importations of people and migrations of people as of 1808. Okay, so they also have the controls over all commerce coming in from foreign nations. Same thing with what goes out. They do have the constitutional standing to not allow certain technology to go to hostile nations. Well, at least that's how it was in the 80s. But it seems like with Bill Clinton and the communists, as the communists completely infiltrated government, they actually started, and this actually started with Bush Sr., where they started giving away sensitive information to hostile nations. And actually, you could go back to Nixon and say Nixon was the one that created the hole in the Iron Curtain with China. Now, it wasn't the Iron Curtain in China, but the Great Wall of China. You know, he was the one that broke a hole in that, to where we started squeezing information and helping our enemies. This is where treason actually started to begin, where we were actually supporting enemies. Oh, well, people say that you have to have a declared war to call for treason. folks, as we've read through this, did you hear any ties to treason being identified as you have to, the person, the country that you're charged with committing treason, like Bill Clinton giving them Loral technology, which is China, we have to be at war with them? No. When they have hostile intent and or when this is, becomes a national security, in other words, this technology is the fundamentals of our technology of national defense, our missile guidance system and everything else. Giving this information out to just anybody, out to just anybody that will not safeguard this, like China, well, that's just like, this is the same thing as just basically giving the keys to your kingdom. Anyway, so the judicial law and cases that arise, or I should say, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. Do you see, hear that? Under their authority. Do they have the authority to make a law or to actually make a treaty regarding the environment and CO2 levels? No. Now, as a matter of fact, do states have the authority to enter into treaties with other nations over CO2, like the Paris Accords? Absolutely not. Article 1, Section 10 forbids it. Only the United States can enter into international treaties. And that power has to be a delegated power. It has to be an enumerated power of the treaty that they're making. In other words, if there's nothing that delegates them a treaty, or I should say an enumerated power over the environment, they can't make a treaty regarding the environment. They need an amendment first. And it's the same thing with becoming a member. Is there any enumerated power that allows the United States to become a governmental member of the United Nations to subjugate us to another government? Absolutely not. It's not there. Our membership in the UN is fraudulent and it's just wrong on so many levels. It violates our essence of national security. Now, I understand having having good accord and having a good relationship with all nations, but the United Nations is a government that is basically trying to dictate its law upon us. There's no authority in the Constitution that allows them to do that, allows the general government to give them that power to subjugate us, to allow us to now be subject to laws under the United Nations and international laws. And as a matter of fact, as it states right here, the laws of the United States and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. We first have to give them the authority to do so. It also extends to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, between a citizen of another state. Now, this was modified, and this was actually pulled back in the 11th Amendment, because the 11th Amendment says, no, states are sovereign. You can't just butt in to, you know, these types of cases between a state and citizens of another state and between citizens of different states. They have the jurisdiction between citizens of the same state claiming lands under grants of different states and between a state of citizens, therefore, and foreign states, citizens or subjects. But to be clear, they can't use these types of things to open up an issue that they have no jurisdiction on, such as marriage, such as life, such as the environment, and so forth. They have the right to listen to some of these cases, but when it comes into these issues that they have no jurisdiction, the federal court system has to raise their hands and say, we have no jurisdiction over those issues. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so just to be clear, you know, what I just read in Section 2, to all cases affecting ambassadors, to public ministers, consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which, because admiralty and maritime jurisdiction is really kind of like an international issue. And so to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, between a state, and we kind of will get into the 11th Amendment and how this really pulls back what Section 2 kind of covers, between the citizens of different states and so forth, and between citizens of the same state claiming lands under grants of different states, and between states or the citizens thereof and foreign states, citizens, or subjects. So for the most part, that's kind of clear, but to be really, really clear, the only thing that they actually have is really, you know, these land things, because I should say purchases of land and or possibly contracts. When it comes down to moral issues, religion, abortion, homosexual marriage, and those types of things, if it falls under religious issues, they can't touch it. It's not an enumerated power. It's actually an enumerated nugatory power. They cannot make any laws respecting religion, period. So they can't even hear a case regarding the law of one state regarding, you know, this equal process if it is of religious purposes. And they say, oh, well, homosexual marriage snuck under the wire under equal protection under the law. Well, doesn't matter. It's the same thing as religion. They can't make any law. They can't even make a ruling. They cannot meddle with it. Why and how? Because that's how the Constitution was defined. Now, these word weasels or soothsayers, whatever you want to call them, as justices over the past 200 years, they have aggrandized their ability to reach into these things because they have completely ignored the terms and definitions of this compact as defined at the time of ratification to help aggrandize and make their lives more interesting. I really don't care if a judge's life is not interesting, whether they're collecting cobwebs and dust, because there's really very little for them to do. if you look at the powers and jurisdictions granted them under this Constitution and then constrained under this Constitution, even by the 11th Amendment as well, as we've pointed out, well, I'm sorry. It may be a dead-end job and you're making way too much money. Okay, it is what it is. But don't make it illegal, fraudulent, and at the expense of America, take away our liberties because you want a more exciting profession. Because John Jay, who was a chief, I think it was the Chief Justice, he was definitely a part of the Supreme Court. My gray matter on, you know, whether he was a Chief Justice or not, I'd have to look it up because these things, I forget more stuff about the Constitution and history than many people have even learned. But, and that's nothing to brag about. This is an indictment of our society. Seriously, there are, if you look at the majority of the people in America, they don't know any of this stuff. Anyway, John Jay, after he went to do the Treaty of the Mississippi with Spain and came back as abysmal failure, he was basically asked later on, you know, after the wounds had kind of healed and everybody was stopped, you know, at least we didn't pull a John Jay there, you know, because it was like he was the brunt of bad jokes for a while. And so they came back to him and said, hey, would you like to get a seat back onto the Supreme Court? And John Jay turned him down and said, no, because really there's not that much to do for the Supreme Court. Now that they had been operating for about a decade, if not a little more, and he just said, no, I'll just stick to the private sector. I'll be happy with that. And he was being honest. It wasn't until Marshall, with the advisement of Hamilton in how to aggrandize the court's role to where it became supposedly the Congress is the most powerful body within the three bodies of government. And next thing you know, the Supreme Court becomes the almighty body. Are you kidding me? No, I'm not kidding. Anyway, going on, Section 2 has another paragraph. Actually, there's a couple more. And it says, in all cases affecting ambassadors and other public ministers and councils, and those in which a state shall be party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction when it is involved with these ambassadors and other public ministers and consuls. Now, you got to understand that these are the people that are out doing foreign, you know, treaties. They're representing the president. In other words, when you look at a consul, you look at a minister, an ambassador, an emissary. This is the man that's representing the president and the United States. And so in all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both as to law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. And I highlight this, and under such regulations as Congress shall make, because Congress actually has the power to reel in the federal court. And they've yet to do it. They've never done it. Because why? Because Congress realized, because Hamilton was working on both sides of the vacuum. What does that mean? Well, on one side, the vacuum sucks. On the other side, the vacuum blows. And so you can choose whichever end is the judiciary, the other end is Congress. Bottom line, Hamilton went to both sides and says, hey, if you let these guys aggrandize their role and you don't reel them in, they will actually help you gain more control and more power. You'll be able to work together for the common cause of aggrandizing the federal government and its jurisdiction well outside the bounds of the Constitution. Wink, wink, nod, nod, and everybody got it and said, oh, okay, so we work together like we're colluding or conspiring. Yes, now you get it. And that's how we've gotten to where we are today. Anyway, the trial of all crimes except in cases of impeachment shall be by jury. Did you hear that? Now, that is in the federal courts. You have to understand that this was not declaring common law. it was declaring that all trials held by the federal courts will be by jury, except in cases of impeachment. And such trial shall be held in the state where the said crime shall have been committed. But when not committed within any state, the trial shall be at such place or places as the Congress may by law have directed. Now, this one last line, the trial shall be at the such place. If you remember going through the ratification debates, this was a huge issue because it was brought up by Mason and all the anti-federals. Oh, you could drag us anywhere and everywhere. And though they were making a point, show me in the history books where the court system and Congress has been cruel in moving trials all the way across the nation because they're trying to make it inconvenient for those who are under, you know, under the charge or who are being tried. And so as they talked about this in the ratification debates, it was pretty clear that, you know, they're going to do this at the most convenient mechanism as possible. And that was the whole point. And there is, I believe, in the cases, I'd have to talk to actually a lawyer or a judge, I believe that there are venues and vicinages that become in play because of the, you know, the, let's just say, the people in the local area are so informed about the potential crime that your jury pool could be polluted. And so in those types of cases, to ensure a fair trial, they do, can move those as well. But anyway, Section 3 of the third article. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies. Now see, or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. Now, so what is an enemy? And what would be adhering to the enemy? So an enemy, based on the 14th Amendment, an enemy is any person that is deliberately violating the laws of the land, deliberately violating this Constitution. So let me ask you this. The people that want to come to America, we have an immigration process. They can apply anywhere from their host country. Or if they, you know, if they just don't have the technology or they're looking for, you know, a nice venture to get out into, you know, the sun and the air and have a good environmental experience, they kind of walk up to the United States. The process in that method would be coming to a port of entry where you would then apply to enter into the United States to become an immigrant. That is the immigration process. It is a proactive process that the individual must engage. Anybody that chooses not to follow that process and actually runs over our border, ignoring our laws and deliberately violating our laws, do you believe that they are a friend of our laws of immigration? Or do you believe that they are enemies to our laws of immigration? And it would be the latter, not the former. And so anybody that is giving aid and comfort to illegals that are actually coming across our border, like our government is treasonous. But we'll go back into this in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.